So I'm going to talk about the Mothers and Midwives in Action campaign. It started in May of 2009, and it has its roots, well, first of all, in the out-of-hospital birth movement here in the United States, but and around the world. But specifically, I want to link it back to resolution that was adopted by APHA in 2001, recognizing the developing or the mounting evidence that out-of-hospital birth could be safe and that midwives were an important asset to the healthcare system. APHA resolution stated that they support efforts to increase access to out-of-hospital maternity care services and increase the range of quality maternity care choices available to consumers through recognition that legally regulated and nationally certified direct entry midwives can serve clients desiring safe, planned out-of-hospital maternity care services. There were many elements and recommendations in the resolution, but one of them was that APHA urges public and private insurance plans to eliminate barriers to the reimbursement and equitable payment of direct entry midwifery services in both public and private payment systems. I've been on enough advisory committees and commissions and things over the years to know that these kind of statements, while very powerful and they take incredible amount of work up front to negotiate and write and develop and get organizations like APHA to adopt, and then they can just sit there. And unless you have a group of passionate people that are willing to step up and use those documents, use those recommendations to influence public policy, start projects, take action, they don't mean a whole lot. So this is kind of the story about how in this last year our organizations came together to actually take this recommendation forward. For those that don't know, certified professional midwives are nationally credentialed and currently are licensed in 24 states. They're independent practitioners who meet the standards for certification set by the North American Registry of Midwives. They're trained to provide health promotive and preventive care that's evidence-based, incorporates best practices, and avoids the overuse of drugs and interventions. They're the only maternity care professional that's been specifically trained to provide out-of-hospital birth, and they're the fastest growing segment of the midwifery profession. In 2008, Childbirth Connection, in a collaboration with the Reforming States Group and the Milbanks Memorial Fund, published this landmark piece of work called Evidence-Based Maternity Care, What It Is and What It Can Achieve. And they, as we know, found that many women and babies receive poor quality maternity care, including many procedures, drugs, and tests that are not needed, and their failure to get many of the beneficial forms of care. They found that private insurers and Medicaid programs are getting poor value for their considerable investment in maternity care, which translates into wasted resources for taxpayers, employers, and for families. Interestingly, and thank you to Betty Ann and her partner Ken Johnson, the study that they did on CPM outcomes found that the rates of interventions found in the study of CPM attended births should be benchmarks for what the majority of childbearing women and babies who are in good health might achieve. This was a really important statement and one that was helpful in sort of in 2008 for that to come forward in this kind of caliber report gave us a lot of juice to move forward to try to affect national policy. They recommended, one of the recommendations then was to foster broad access to safe, effective midwifery care by setting adequate Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement state rates for nurse midwives, certified midwives, and certified professional midwives. Everybody remember 2008? We had a big presidential election that year, and clearly in the campaign and in the months afterwards, it was becoming obvious that health reform was going to move front and center as an agenda in the new administration. Sensing this was an opportunity, those of us who were involved in this work started thinking about how to take advantage of that opportunity. The National Association of Certified Professional Midwives had been looking for a way for a couple of years to take federal recognition of the CPM forward, and in May and invited other organizations to join with them in the campaign. Then in April, May, we had our very first meeting of the six organizations that then made up the coalition in Washington, D.C., and Midwives and Mothers in Action was launched. The six organizations, interestingly, are groups that have been in relationship with each other for many years, but have never had a formal relationship. And we have our own, like any group of organizations, our own internal differences of mission, differences of purpose, particular histories, cultural, with the organizational styles of doing business. And so coming together was an interesting challenge, but very important that we had two organizations representing mothers, Citizens for Midwifery, as primarily a consumer organization. International Center for Traditional Childbearing is a group that's really focused on improving outcomes of care among African American women and reducing disparities, addressing disparities in care. And then the North American Registry of Midwives, Midwifery Education Accreditation Council, Midwives Alliance of North America, and National Association of CPMs. One of the things that we did that I think was extremely important early on, and thanks very much to Jara Simpkin, one of my co-authors and colleagues who's here in the audience with me, she brought forward the idea of actually articulating and agreeing upon a memorandum of understanding about how we would work with each other. And we established certain values and methods for our work that was inclusive, consensus-oriented, data-driven, tech-savvy, and effective. Also very important that that each of the partner organizations committed two top leaders from their organizations and significant resources to the campaign. We, in that very early period then, established kind of our tagline, advocating for certified professional midwives, a high-value option for quality, cost-effective maternity care. We set as our goal to get Medicaid to cover services provided by CPMs in all settings. Our target was to take advantage of the health reform legislation and get a little something in there. I used to tell my family, this is what health reform legislation is, and this is the bit that we're trying to get in. And our strategy was to engage our grassroots supporters and to employ top experts in the fields of health policy and political strategy in order to build an effective campaign. In the months over the summer then, we organized hundreds of supporters across the country. They wrote letters, raised funds, had picnics, had parades. This was from a parade in Montana of women who had had midwifery care and wanted other women to have access. We hired the lobbying firm Health Policy Source, and we had three people from the business assigned to our cause, and each of them brought a specific set of skills, political connections, and as we have found in all of our state legislative works, folks really start liking midwives, and these three have really embraced our cause now. It's really fun working with them. We also reached out to other national organizations and got endorsements from these. Very important. Thank you. And started building our case. And one thing I think was really important part of the campaign is that we nested our campaign in the larger picture of maternity care reform. And so we always, in all of our presentations to congressional staff and other folks, we talked about the importance of maternity care reform overall and pointed to the evidence, the need, and the evidence that would support transforming maternity care. These are some of the figures Obviously, we spend millions and millions of dollars in the United States unnecessarily on maternity care, and we're not getting the results we should be getting. And then we started within that context to say, okay, well, midwives have something to offer here. So with midwives, when patients have choice and access to midwives, they have lower costs and better outcomes. This way we come back to APHA resolution, World Health Organization statements, and you know, pump up that there's broad support for this. We also used a study that had been done in Washington State by the Department of Health, who were looking at cost-benefit analysis, and found that care provided by CPMs, who in Washington State at that time attended just 2% of all the births, resulted in fewer low birth weight babies, lower cesarean section rates, and similar rates of infant mortality when compared to low-risk hospital birth. In our state Medicaid fee-for-service program alone, majority of women in our state on Medicaid are in managed care plans, but in just in the fee-for-service population, the savings was nearly $500,000 over a two-year budget cycle. And the combined and the estimated combined public and private insurance savings, if you roll that out across the whole population of women giving birth in the state, was over $2.7 million. That's just for like 1,000 births, 2% attended by midwives. So this is pretty significant. We took that then and working with officials in Washington State to make sure that our methodology was correct, we did projections based on the total number of Medicaid deliveries in the United States in 2006. And made an assumption, very conservative, that if it was just 1% of those women chose to give birth out of hospital with a CPM, just in those states where CPMs are licensed, the estimated annual cost savings would be nearly $41 million. That's annually, not every 2 years. We found an early interest and support for our work in Chairman Waxman's office, and they carried this data forward to the Congressional Budget Office for a score, because of course anything that might have budget implications in the health reform legislation had it to be scored by Congressional Budget Office. Was it cost more, cost less? What was the impact going to be? Because we were such a small thing and such a big thing, we never got that Congressional Budget Office score, because they never, we were always kept getting pushed back in the line. Because we had done the homework and had been able to put the figures forward in a good way, thank you, Carol, it was very effective in our lobbying efforts. Then by November of 2009, the Kaiser Family Foundation came out with updated data on state Medicaid programs. And you know, very important to understand that 4 in 10 births in our country are covered by Medicaid. And this was one of the reasons that we had targeted Medicaid reimbursement, because it really makes a difference if 40% of the women in the country have access to these services, we're going to see an improvement in their outcomes, and certainly important for their choice. And then there are states like Louisiana, where it's now about 75% of births. Since Katrina, 75% of women are in Medicaid for their births. And Medicaid in Louisiana does not pay for licensed midwives. The other thing is that they all pay for hospitals. All the states pay for hospital deliveries, but not all of the states pay for birth center deliveries or for home birth services. So that also, you know, informed our work going forward with congressional staff, so that they really understood what the need here was for federal action. Our first champion in Congress, meaning the first one to step up and be a prime sponsor on our for our work, was Maria Cantwell from Washington State, who said in this letter to one of her constituents, "I have long been an advocate on behalf of increasing the availability of midwife and non-hospital birthing services to all expectant mothers, especially those on Medicaid. Under this provision, critical Medicaid funding will be available for birth services provided in licensed birth centers by professionals licensed by their state to assist in the birthing process." So what she did, we had put forward that the the law would recognize and mandate reimbursement for certified professional midwives working in all settings, so in our case, home and birth center primarily. But the birth center stuff had gone forward in the health care reform legislation, and so what she saw was an opportunity to say, okay, we're going to mandate reimbursement for licensed birth centers, so now let's make sure that the providers in those licensed birth centers get paid as well. So it wasn't what we had dreamed of, but it was a real big foot in the door. And so this just restates that. Then, of course, the debate and controversy surrounding healthcare reform drug on. And in March 2001, we had, assuming that it would be done by then, we had planned for our evaluation meeting of the MAMA campaign. We met in March, on March 5th in Washington, D.C., and did our own internal evaluation and started plans for the next phase of our work. Meanwhile, the Senate health care reform bill debate continued in the House, and everyone was holding their breath. It wasn't quite the celebration we had hoped for at that point. But just 2 weeks later, the package did pass, and this was really remarkable. Our health policy source, our lobbying firm, was really pretty astounded because in 9 months, interestingly that it was 9 months, we went from flat, never been in Washington, no presence whatsoever, no one had ever heard of certified professional midwives, to being a little bit in a big bill and had a foot in the door that is serving us well now as we go forward. So we were pretty happy. I want to talk a little bit about the steering committee for the campaign. As I said earlier, each of the six organizations committed two of their leaders. Combined, we had virtually every one of the 12 people on the steering committee had 20 or more years' experience in advocacy for midwifery. And I can't, you know, emphasize too much how important it was that we were able to draw people together who had a real depth of experience at the state level lobbying and working on state legislation, have started schools, we've started accrediting agency, we've started a certifying body, we've done project work, we brought together incredible amount of expertise and skill sets so that, you know, we knew how to do a fundraising campaign. We knew how to set up a database. We knew how to set up a webpage. And that, you know, just within that circle of women, incredible amount of talent and passion for the work. The committee members themselves volunteered over 5,000 hours over the 9 months. Donated money, recruited other volunteers, trained advocates, created materials, et cetera, and so on. Yep, thank you. And so in our evaluation, we did some wrap-up visits to the Hill. We sat together and talked about what did we learn, where was their support, what are the next steps. And again, I want to acknowledge Jera. She and I, with our public health kind of hats on, really insisted that the steering committee do a formal evaluation process. And unfortunately, we didn't set out at the beginning at the very beginning of our work, like a good public health professional would, to say what our purpose was so that we could evaluate it at the end. But we were did a pretty decent job of retrospectively reflecting on what we had done. So we did both surveys and some narrative reporting. We talked about the structure of the campaign, communication and decision making, our internal systems, data, resources, and our needs going forward. We also had two campaign co-chairs. We had specifically and very intentionally had the president of Citizens for Midwifery and the president of the National Association of CPMs as our co-chairs because we wanted that mothers and midwives combination as our representation, and they made their own recommendations based on the results of our evaluation. in terms of what we needed to think about, areas to maintain if we were to go forward, what some of our challenges had been. We had pretty big burnout level, having worked as hard as we did. Areas that needed to improve if we were going to go forward and really sustain this work into the future. And we had a lot of things along those lines. And we agreed that we all had learned an awful lot. Our understanding had deepened, and our mutual respect for each other had grown tremendously in the process of this work. One other thing I would say is that we, when you were talking about getting the grant and now the work just goes up, it's sort of be careful what you ask for. I mean, we sort of in the rush of health reform legislation and the opportunity that presented and this, oh, it's all coming together and we're going to do this. Well, now we're there. We can't just go home. There's still a lot of work to do. And we can't really take a break because you need to show up. The relationships that we built in congressional offices are key to our success, and you've got to maintain those and cultivate them. And now after this election, we're going to have to, you know, start some new relationships. So that's a big thing. One of our first goals this year, of course, has been to follow up on the act and make sure that it's implemented well and that it really does serve women and that they will have access to these provider types and these services. So we've met with Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services to make sure that they understand. They've been really receptive. I have to say, actually, we were a little blown out. We've been there twice. Once was before, at the very beginning of the campaign, and then the second after the act passed. And the second time we came in, we still had our little PowerPoint. We were going to do our little presentation. We had six top people from Medicaid sit with us for 2 hours. We expected to have an hour. They cleared the decks. We came in. They wanted to talk about transforming maternity care. They said, how can we take this and make it as big as we can? How could we put doulas in this? Should it cover breastfeeding? They were so far beyond even what we were thinking about that it was quite inspiring. And, you know, a reminder of how important it is that we be in coalition with each other, not just around provider types or service, you know, narrow definitions of service, but really what's the whole system look like and how can we work together to transform maternity care. These are the states that currently regulate CPMs. All of the blue states. The red dots are the states that the state Medicaid agencies made the decision to pay for these services out of state funds only. You remember that Medicaid is a matching state-federal program. and in these states, they felt that the services were of sufficient value that they would pay just using state funds. They were very happy to support this legislation, some of them, because they know now that they'll get the federal match. The next thing that we are very clear is a goal for this year is to go back with the original proposal, which was a bill that would amend the Social Security Act to mandate Medicaid reimbursement in all settings, not limited to just licensed birth centers. Mary Lawler, who is the person on the left in this picture, is in Washington, D.C. this today, and I expect a call this afternoon that we're going to be able to announce a House sponsor, and we may even be able to announce a Senate sponsor. So for those of you that are on our e-blast list, or if you want to stay in touch, go to our website and sign up to be on those lists. You'll be hearing very soon about our prime sponsors. Of course, in order to do this, we have to sustain the work with a stronger organization, a better infrastructure, long-term funding. It was one thing to do the first pregnancy without really thinking about what it was going to cost. Now we know, and we've got a baby to raise, and now we want to do it again. So how are we going to do this? We negotiated a new memorandum of understanding We hope to increase our staff. We are improving our software tech support systems and building our funding base. The last thing I want to talk about is the Blueprint for Action, Steps Towards a High-Quality Value Maternity Care System. This is really important. Childbirth Connection, remember that evidence-based report from the first part of my presentation, followed that up with a symposium on transforming maternity care. They invited 100 leaders representing a range of stakeholders, hospital administrators, insurance plan people, provider groups, educators, consumers, to look at what needs to be done, who needs to do it, what for, what to, and with whom to improve the quality of maternity care over the next 5 years. And they came out with, as a result of that, they now have a blueprint for action that's comprehensive. It addresses in detail all of these things. It's like a roadmap at the national level, at the state level, in the private sector, in the public sector. What do we need to do to fix this broken maternity care system? The report is organized in these categories, and in within each of those, there's multiple recommendations. The one that we're particularly fond of, in the subject area of reducing disparities in access and outcomes to maternity care, that we expand access to midwives with nationally recognized credentials and accredited birth centers across the country, encouraging health plans to foster access to these forms of care. Again, I can't emphasize enough how important it is for us to see this work in the context of the bigger picture. And that's the way it played, the way that we were received as well as we were in Congress was because we came in talking about that big picture and what the impact would be if we could change maternity care. We weren't there lobbying for a provider group to get another piece, you know, their own slice of the pie. We were there because we care about women. We know it makes a difference how women give birth. We know it makes a difference when they have access to care. It's a matter of social justice to emphasize, you know, relate to our theme here. And it's matters to families, you know. So we also are have as a goal to transform maternity care by supporting Blueprint for Action recommendations. The coalition and the individual partner groups in the coalition are looking for ways to be engaged and are already engaged. There are 4 or 5 pieces of legislation in the works already at the national level, picking up on specific recommendations out of the Blueprint for Action, and we're figuring out ways to support those things going forward. And we hope to be able to apply what we've learned and foster the relationships we've developed in our work to build broader support for that big picture transformation. Okay?
Great. Questions for Joanne?
Cindy? Right, because in, yeah. I also answer that, and Jared, if you think this is wrong, but I think what it means, because our goal was to amend Social Security to recognize the CPM, and because what it looked like we were going to get if assuming the legislation passed was this very watered down version, I think that's what that was about. Well, so no, it did not get in the health reform legislation that was adopted in March, but it now, in these pieces of legislation that are being developed now, there's one in particular that's sponsored by Congresswoman Roybal Allard that specifically mentions the CPM 5 different times. It would make it, yeah, no, No, it mentions CPM, and it's not about reimbursement in Medicaid. That's not an element, but it's about health professions, education, loan repayment programs, core maternity care curriculum, which is an interesting thing, performance measurements. I can't remember the specifics. Yeah. Yes.
And when did they go, and what's the history of that?
It wasn't really until the 70s, because the credential certified nurse midwife didn't exist until the late 60s. When was Medicaid was in the 60s too, wasn't it? Yeah. So it would have been after that, and I don't know the particular timing. I know that one of the things that happened this year that was also really important was that the practice has been, or the policy has been, that they get reimbursed at 65% of what physicians get reimbursed for providing exactly the same care. And achieving parity has been a goal that they've been struggling with for years, and they got it this year. You know, that's an interesting, I think that's been kind of the argument that went around whether they should get parity, was that going to shoot them in the foot because now they were going to get that. But you know what? They still cost less because the intervention rate is so much lower and the outcomes are so much better that ultimately it's still saving the system incredible amount of money. I'm in a in an ongoing discussion argument with my state association president because I think that midwives should get paid more than physicians for the services they provide. And the reason is that they're not providing the same service. They're providing more. And so the number of prenatal visits, the length of prenatal visits, the related counseling and support, the labor sitting, the postpartum care, all of those things are things that physicians don't do.
So what's their opposition during the health reform bill, and is there one maybe because it was so huge and so little? Do you expect more opposition now? Being a little bit more
now that we're just like regular, a normal year? I think it's going to be really interesting. We didn't have a lot of opposition. The ACNM did their first little hoo-ha when they sent a letter just as we were announcing the campaign, denigrating the credential. And they got slammed by their members for doing that. And they really have stepped back, and we've kind of re-established cordial relations in recent months. And I think are working together on the Roybal-Allard bill and other pieces. So I think we can expect that's not going to be an issue. ACOG, when the issue of ACOG opposition to the certified professional midwife came up in congressional offices, and they wanted to know what's up with that, and we said it was a turf battle, they went, oh, okay, and moved right on. Was just it, I don't know. It might have been a magical year, and I wouldn't, I don't want to assume anything. I mean, I think that's one of the other take-home lessons is how important it is to take advantage of opportunities when they arise, like we had with the health reform legislation, because everybody was so busy in so many areas that we really could slip in under the radar. But again, I think that the Transforming Maternity Care, the Blueprint for Action work has been so important because every time we can point to that and say, this is a consensus document from people who represented ACOG, from people who represented the American Hospital Association, and here's the recommendation.
All right, well, thank you, Joanne.
Yeah.